Deep within the Geek Cave, there lives a sarcastic woman who jumped the snark years ago. With her cynicism talisman forever upon her neck, she guides you through the cinematic wasteland. It's time for the More Than Monthly Movie Review from the GRD Cinemistress, Carol the Cat.
Hello, this is the Cinemistress, and I went to the movies. I went and saw Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, which stars Eddie Redmayne, Jude Law, Dan Fogler, Catherine Waterston, Zoe Kravitz, and a host of other wizards and witches. And of course, Johnny Depp, who I think qualifies as a wizard in real life. Or at least he dresses the part, I don't know. This is directed by David Yates, who directed the last three Harry Potter movies and Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. As usual, I will save my spoilers to the end of the review, and I will give you fair warning. Now, anyone who knows me knows I'm a bit of a Potterhead. It's not as bad as my Tolkienitis, but I am a proud Hufflepuff. But when they announced that they were doing three movies based on Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, which is basically just a 50 to 60 page list of monsters in the Potterverse, I was a bit skeptical. But then they announced that J.K. Rowling was actually writing the scripts, and that Newt Scamander would be the central character in the trilogy. And I had to see them, because Newt is kind of the Hufflepuff homeboy, and I had to show my support. I thought the first film, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, was kind of all style and very little substance, but it was really pleasant to be back in the Harry Potter universe, and I thought the film was really beautiful, and I liked the time frame that they put it in, the 1920s. It was an okay film. Unfortunately, a lot of the problems I had with the first one bleed into the second one and are magnified, but we'll get into that in a second. First, the plot. It's several months after the events in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, and Grindelwald is in prison. Of course, he escapes before the opening credits because it doesn't matter what country's Ministry of Magic we're talking about, they all hire terrible, terrible people. Newt Scamander has been banned from international travel after telling the British Ministry he won't help them locate Credence Blackbone, the Obscurus from the first film. The Ministry then hires what amounts to a bounty hunter to find and kill Credence. They then go to Dumbledore and ask if he will help them fight Grindelwald. Dumbledore, for some reason, won't tell them why he can't fight Grindelwald. He just can't. But he won't tell them why. He then goes behind the Ministry's back and sends Newt to France to find Credence and to fight Grindelwald. See, this is why no one trusts you, Dumbledore. Well, that and you left an innocent child in an abusive household for 11 years, and then started using that child as a pawn in your cat-and-mouse game with an evil wizard while still sending him back to the abusive household every summer, until you finally put him in such extreme danger that you're killed and he has to sacrifice himself in order to defeat that evil wizard. Of course, that happens much, much later. But see, even in these early years, Dumbledore is doing very untrustworthy things. Anyway, back to the story at hand. Newt, Jacob, Queenie head to France to find Tina and Credence. Do any of these names sound familiar? If not, rewatch the first film. As a matter of fact, rewatch the first film. You're going to need to. And if you haven't seen the first film, watch the first film or you're going to be completely lost. Once in France, they must race against Grindelwald, who's also looking for Credence because he plans to use the Obscurus in his plot to take over the world for the wizards. He will, of course, leave some muggles because he needs workers. Who else is going to clean the streets? Also, there are more Fantastic Beasts. And Nicholas Flamel, who's played by Brontës Hodorowski, who's the son of Alejandro Hodorowski, who's a really kind of brilliant director, and I just like his name, Brontës. Cool name. So that's basically the plot. Did that make sense? This is a Potterverse. Does anything make sense? Anyway, let's get to the good, the bad, and the ugly of this film. First, the good. Much like the first film, this movie is beautiful. I love the set design. The costumes are amazing. Everything just looks fantastic. Pun intended. My love of the Potter universe has always been more about the world itself than the actual stories. I love the universe that J.K. Rowling created. I think the stories have issues and some problems, but I always enjoyed them. But I truly loved that magical world that she created. And here, it looks beautiful. And I'm really glad they got away from the magic in Britain and we're starting to see other countries and how magic is used in those places. Most of the effects here are really good, with some exceptions, and we'll get into that. The acting here is kind of hit and miss. Some of the hits, I really loved Jude Law as young Dumbledore. I'm hoping he plays a major part in the third film because that's excellent casting. I also actually liked Johnny Depp as Grindelwald. I know there was pushback when Depp was hired due to reasons outside of the actual film itself, but here he has the correct amount of menace, and Grindelwald's reasoning is actually kind of believable. We'll get into that in the spoilers, but I liked what they were going with there. Dan Fogler, of course, is adorable and very funny, and I wish he had more to do here, because every time he was on the screen, it made me smile. I've been a fan of his since Fanboys, and I wish he had been given more to do in this film. Unfortunately, this leads us to the bad, because he isn't given a lot to do in this film. The main focus of the film is once again Newt, and once again, I grew very tired of Eddie Redmayne's, "Oh, shucks, I'm so cute, look at me, I'm going to stare at the floor and stumble over my words and stare at you through my bundle of hair, aren't I adorable? I'm just adorable, don't you love me?" That got so old in the first film, and it gets just as old here. Catherine Waterston as Tina, the aura that Newt is in love with, seems like she's irritated the whole movie, and I don't know if that was supposed to be her character or the fact that she forgot she had signed for three movies, but those two, as the center point of the film, didn't quite work for me. They worked, you know, I put up with Redmayne in the first film, and the chemistry between the two was much better in the first film. Here, of course, they're supposed to be at odds because there's a misunderstanding, and of course nobody in the Potterverse will actually speak to each other, so the misunderstanding continues rather than, you know, clearing it up easily. We'll get into that in the spoilers. But here she just looks irritated. She just doesn't look like she wants to be there. I also have a bit of problem with the magic that is used in these films. Okay, so here's an example. Do you remember Superman 4, The Quest for Peace? Of course you don't, because that's a horrible, horrible film and nobody should watch it. But there's a moment in Superman 4 where Superman and Nuclear Man are fighting, and they crash through the Great Wall of China. And Superman stops what he's doing and uses his vision to fix the Great Wall of China. It's like he has Bob the Builder vision, and he fixes the Great Wall. And anyone watching the film is thinking, when did he get that power? And it's the same thing here. The magic in these films, you know, it was bad in Harry Potter, but in this Fantastic Beasts films, it's just out of control. It does whatever you need it to, when you need it to. And there doesn't seem to be a limit. And they use spells in these films that I kept thinking, wow, that would have been really helpful when Harry was at Hogwarts, you know, 70 years later. Example, Newt uses a spell in the streets of Paris to reveal what happened on that street the previous evening, and he sees shadows of people and what happened. And I kept thinking, why aren't they using that when Harry's at school? Why didn't they use that when Sirius Black was arrested and thrown into Azkaban? Why would any innocent person be in Azkaban when you have a spell that will reveal what happened in a certain place the previous evening? I mean, they could have just gone to Lily and James's Potter's house, cast a spell, and realized, oh, Peter Pettigrew turned on them, not Sirius Black. Sorry about that, Mr. Black. You on your way. Let's go get that Pettigrew fellow before he turns into a rat and sleeps with all the Weasley boys. She's not looking back at what she's already written and limiting her magic here. And that grew to be very frustrating in this film. But it's not the most frustrating part about this film, because now we're going to get to the ugly. I think J.K. Rowling is a very talented novelist, but she is not a talented screenwriter. She is used to writing 400 to 600 page novels and then having a screenwriter take that, cut what is necessary, and turn it into a viable 2-hour script. Here, what she's trying to do is stuff a 400 to 600 page novel into a 2-hour script, and what you get is a bit of a mess. There are so many characters that are unneeded, so many subplots that go absolutely nowhere. And because she's trying to cram so much story into it, what you have are these huge chunks of exposition. There's a scene in this film, it's about two-thirds of the way through in a graveyard. There's two characters, one of which you've just met, you've just learned his name. You have no idea who this character is. And they just dump 10 minutes of exposition. Well, this is my backstory. Let me tell you my backstory. And then this other character comes in. No, that's not how it happened. This is how it happened. And then there's this huge other story. And at the end of the film, you realized none of that made a difference because those subplots go nowhere. She's trying to cram so much into the script that the entire thing becomes incredibly muddled and incredibly exposition heavy. And it's just people talking. And most of what they're talking about doesn't make a difference. I would hope that she hands the screenwriting off to somebody else in the third film, but I don't think she will. I think she has this all planned out in her head, and I think the third film's probably going to be just as muddled. So, final thoughts. Again, this is a movie that is more style than substance, and that is unfortunate. I think Rowling needs to stick with novels and not screenplays. And I think Eddie Redmayne really needs to stop the oh shucks bit of his acting because it's growing very tiresome. I really wish this one was better because I really wanted it to be better. I'm rating Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald as detention with Gilderoy Lockhart. Yeah, you're trapped with something kind of pretty, but there's very little substance and you just wish you could leave. And now, spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoilers? What spoilers?
You tell me.
Spoilers.
So, let's talk about the title of this film, The Crimes of Grindelwald. Grindelwald doesn't do a whole lot in this film, crime-wise. I mean, he has some muggles killed, including a baby. Hello. But he doesn't kill them. He has somebody else kill them. He has his evil henchwoman, who I don't think is actually named in this film. He has her do it. So he doesn't really do anything. At the very end, he gives his big speech as to why he wants to take over the world. And this is the annoying thing, because his speech is actually really good and he makes sense. He feels that the wizard should take over the world because the muggles are blowing themselves up. They had just gotten out of World War I. They look like they're going to start another world war. And somehow he knows that there's going to be an atom bomb at some point. I'm not sure how he knows that, but his argument makes sense. His argument that the muggles are destroying the world themselves without magic actually makes sense. And if she had focused on that rather than, oh, look, he's evil, or, oh, look, pretty, pretty, here's a fantastic beast, isn't this pretty? She's focusing on the wrong thing in this film. And I'm talking about J.K. Rowling, the screenwriter here. She's focusing on the wrong thing because the film is The Crimes of Grindelwald, and you're not even focusing on Grindelwald at all. Also, you have characters that mean absolutely nothing in this film. Zoe Kravitz plays Leta Lestrange, who both Scamander boys, Newt and his brother Theseus, are kind of sort of in love with. She's marrying Theseus. She is one of the two characters that dumps the exposition in that scene I was talking about. And what she tells everybody is that Credence is not a Lestrange, and she swapped babies on a boat, and he's somebody else. And it's aggravatingly muddled because her story leads nowhere. She's supposed to be this conflicted character because she was bullied in high school and nobody likes the Lestranges and oh, woe is her. And Grindelwald looks at her at one point and goes, unloved, unwanted. And I'm sitting there thinking, but she's getting married and she's got two guys that love her and she seems to have a really nice job in the ministry. So what exactly is wrong with her life? Again, they're writing stuff that isn't being shown on screen. And then you get your final reveal of the film where Credence is shown not to be a Lestrange. He's actually a Dumbledore. He is Albus Dumbledore's younger brother that we never heard of. And Albus apparently doesn't know about. And Albaforth doesn't know about. And nobody knows about because they just came out of nowhere. And Grindelwald tells Credence, you will take the Dumbledore name. And Credence goes all evil and blows up a mountain. And I'm thinking, well, why would he turn all evil? His family doesn't know he exists and he's looking for family. Why would he not immediately go, I've got a brother? I've got two brothers? Cool, I'm off to Hogwarts. But no, he, of course, takes this information and turns evil because it's necessary for him to turn evil for the third film, I guess, because Dumbledore has to fight him. I don't know. Oh, and let's talk about Dumbledore, because the reason why he can't fight Grindelwald is because he had a previous relationship with Grindelwald and they had made a blood pact, meaning they can't fight each other while this blood pact is in existence. And Dumbledore, of course, won't tell anybody that. He can't look at the ministry and go, well, okay, I was really stupid. I had a relationship with this dude and he turned out to be something I didn't think he was, and we made a stupid pact and I can't fight him until that pact is destroyed. But he doesn't tell them that because that would be helpful. Then they could actually, you know, move forward to destroying the little... Because the blood pact is actually a piece of jewelry. I'm not joking. It's a piece of jewelry. It's Harry Potter. Everything's a piece of jewelry. Or a charm or something. It's worse than the Lord of the Rings, I swear. But he doesn't tell anybody. And that just creates conflict with the ministry when conflict doesn't need to be there. It just... This film is frustrating on so many levels because there's glimpses of really good storytelling here. And it's just buried under all of these subplots that go absolutely nowhere. And with that, this is the Cinemistress signing off. Now I'm off to bake some treacle tots for Thanksgiving dinner. Yes, I'm doing a bit of a British thing.
GRD is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 United States License. Come check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and hit up our website at geekradiodaily.com. Find more of Carol the Cat at guardiansofthegeekery.com and purplehairedpixie.com.